The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFURP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at bearddragongames.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
Old World fans, the Professional Casual Network is starting a slow grow campaign in February 2024. The best part is, you can participate no matter where you are in the world. All you have to do is join our Discord and track your army's progress in the slow grow channels. We're starting February at 500 points and adding 250 points every month until we reach 2,000 points in August. Started late? Not a problem. Come join us in Discord to track your progress, get hobby tips, and help keep us all accountable throughout this campaign. Come grow with us in the old world. Hey, my Elector Casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls, the best old world podcast on the internet. I'm Taylor, your personal grudge bearer, and I'm joined tonight by Tim and a very special guest, Andy Gould. Welcome in.
Thank you.
Of course. So Andy, has said he wanted to jump on. I asked him, and he was very cool with chatting with us about his Warhammer Fantasy Battles experiences. And maybe we'll probably jump into Orcs and Goblins at some point because, you know, Greenskins are pretty cool as a dwarf player. I'm going to, I also have a whole Night Goblin army. So like, as I feel like most dwarf players do, you know, Battle for Skull Pass was such a great deal. But before we get started, as always, I want to just send a huge dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every single day, keep the lights on, and, you know, they keep Tim from eating his brand new skeleton people.
To be fair, they just look like they wouldn't be a lot of calories and probably high in protein, so I just feel like it'd be a good, useful snack that will keep me fuller longer.
Totally fair. And listen, if you're going to...
It's all bone marrow at the end of the day, right? Like,
if there's any crack that you're going to eat, make sure it's plastic crack, but don't do that. So, yes, once again, patreon.com/professionalcasual, and a huge shout out to our current big subs of Xpaxis, Rob, Dagna, Cider Drinker, Tony Hot Hands, Otis, Leroy, Iron Maze, Wizard Skills, Bicon, Briar Mage, Tau, Cliff Jumper, and James. And a special shout out as well to our Elector Casuals, Tony M, Jonathan B, Stefan, Rev Right Mad, Cliff, and Pagan Prince. Thank you, everybody, for your support.
Can I ask you a really quick question to interrupt your train of thought?
Me?
Yeah.
Sure.
So I've been on a couple of these episodes, right?
Yeah.
And I've never understood what a huge Dowie thank you is.
So Dowie is a dwarf.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So it's dwarf in Khazalid, which is the dwarven language.
Nice. All right.
Which Lucky might speak. I don't know.
I've played a couple dwarves in WFRP, and I always put one rank in language Khazalid, so I can speak it perfectly.
Yeah, so Dowie is dwarf dowry, which is what we talked about at some point, is essentially dwarf friend. I'm a big nerd. I got the Khazalid lexicon as a bookmark.
Dude, I'm going to know more about the lore of this game than I will about how to play the game before I roll my first die.
Probably.
I'm pretty excited about that.
So Andy, welcome in. I'm so glad you could be here with us today. Thank you so much for coming to hang out with us and the craziness.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Literally anytime. But, let's jump into our first little question. Listen, this isn't a quiz. You didn't have to study, but I hope you have right answers because I am grading you at the end.
Well, if I don't, I'll make it up.
Perfect.
Don't like worry, I set the curve every time with like a strong 45 out of 100, so...
I'm feeling pretty confident.
And that's just because I put my name on the paper, so... I did get that wrong once, but listen, we learned our lesson.
Yeah, it didn't say Tim. It was so weird. So, I want to jump in. So, you've been playing fantasy for a while, and I'd love to hear, like, what actually got you into Warhammer Fantasy? What got you, like, to start collecting and playing?
Sure. Yeah, I've probably been playing since, well, I have been playing since, like, the late 80s. And, I think like most people that get into these kind of games, it came from a role-playing background because during the 80s, playing D&D. And when I was going in college, I went to a local hobby store and they had I was picking up miniatures to play with because back then there wasn't a lot of supply for role-playing miniatures. And then I saw a box set of a Regiment of Renown, which I didn't know what that was at the time, of Ruglan's Armored Orcs. And I'm like, these orcs would be great for a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons as like DM, and these are my bad guys. And I even wrote a scenario about them, but that's what got me into it. Cause I don't know if you're aware, but back then the box had the rules for the units on the back of it. So on the front, you had the picture, and on the back, there's like they had the cards now to play, the weapon skill, the ballistics, all the stats on it. There was three different heroes that actually came in there, I think. Yeah, the standard bearer was unique, and then there was two heroes. So that's what got me into it. I'm like, I looked at that. I'm like, I don't know what this game is, but I looked into it, and then I'm like, that's great. You can play D&D, but on huge battles.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So have you ever, this is a complete aside, have you ever played Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay by chance?
Yeah, a couple different editions. I played... Oh. In college, I played the very first one when it first came out. I played it in college with some of my fraternity brothers.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I have go short-lived, ahead,
short-lived campaign.
I actually really like the idea of the battle card being on the back, like just from a browsing perspective, going to the game store and pulling boxes off the shelf and looking at units and what they can do. It's like a library. I super dig that. It's probably best that they don't do that because I'd buy a lot more.
Well, what they were doing at the time is it's similar to like the old world. Back then, there was one army book that had all the armies in it. And so when they would introduce a new entry, they would introduce it by its like packaged unit. You know, so there's like 17 orcs in there, and that's how many came in the unit. But then it had all the stats. But they did that for Ruglan's Armored Orcs. I think there was a couple Wood Elf elite units. There was Dowie. Like they had Imperial Dwarves, and it looks like they're on the slate to get re-released for the old world.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that they're going to do the same thing. They're going to shout back to that old time when they put it out in the box and the stats are on the back.
That'd be really nice.
Yeah, that'd be rad.
Because the convenience of the cards is like huge without having to flip through books and stuff like that. And Grant, my only experience with GW stuff so far had been 40K. And having a couple different books that I'm cycling through and trying to find stuff was always a pain. And when they started releasing those cards, I was like, yo, this is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It definitely, it doesn't even clutter up the battlefield too much. It's like the spell cards. It's great reference.
Yeah. Yep.
And I got to just say the armored orcs from the 80s with like the orc bat faces.
Yeah.
Right? They were just so characterful. I loved them so much.
They were so good. I had the halberdiers from that set. And then I had another set. They used to have orc crossbowmen. And yes. They had the same kind of heads.
Oh, my gosh. Just
some of my favorite models.
It's so good. Tim, I'll find you a picture later because it was such an iconic look for orcs where the grins were just huge and they had these weird like pointy ears.
Okay.
They were super neat.
When you say bat-headed orcs, I think of like Zeb from Rebels.
Yeah.
And not too far off.
No, for sure. It's old orcs were such a vibe.
I've actually got that box still, by the way.
Oh, no kidding.
The cover box. Yep.
That's cool, man. That's super cool. I think, and again, another complete aside, my favorite orc mini that's ever been produced is the orc raider with pig.
Oh, yeah. And the little torch with the pig under there. Yeah.
A little torch, yep, holding onto a pig. Yeah, it's the best.
Was that a Mordheim miniature? Was that
I don't know if it was Mordheim or if it was like mercenaries
or just an off sculpt. I don't know. It was great. It was a great model.
It was so good. Oh man. So late 80s, that's gotta be like second edition ish.
I think so. I think third edition was the big red box where they had the magic cards. Okay. And everything was played different. You actually used cards for your spell points back then. Like there was a deck of cards that would power up the spells.
Gotcha. And,
yeah. So you couldn't dispel unless you got a dispel card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was magic has probably seen the most changes over all the editions than anything. It's gone through I think it was fifth edition when they introduced the dice based system and tagged it in with the level of the caster.
So did you have cards that you would like draw? So you were like hoping to top deck a counter or something like that? Or was it like kind of, was it more static? You brought in X amount of cards into a battle.
There was a deck sort of like the Winds of Magic. It was a Winds of Magic deck though. And you would shuffle the cards. I forgot if you'd roll 2d6 and you would deal out cards and like whoever's turn it was got the first card. So if there's an odd number, they get one extra card.
It's very flavorful for the Winds of Magic.
Yeah.
Oh, it was, but you could cast on both turns, yours and your opponent's back then in the magic phase. So if you had power cards, then you could cast your spells, which made vampire counts very good, you know, because they were raising all the time, twice per turn.
I like that. I like vampire boys. I like raising zombies and skeletons. Like that sounds dope.
Oh, if anyone needs, it's raising more undead for sure.
Yes. more.
They're such a great faction.
I read the Vampire Wars book and I'm trying to get Tim to like
learn how to read.
I'm trying to get someone to record an audiobook for Tim to listen to it because the Vampire Wars book is just incredible.
If anyone out there wants to narrate those books and send it to me in audio, like I would really appreciate it.
Audible might have it.
Yeah, that's fair.
If Audible has it, yeah, I'll get it. Like hands down.
They just started putting out some of the End Times books.
Really? Did they? Oh, that's good to know. The End Times was fun. It was
my
fun.
First WFRP like book was Drakenfels. I was for the most part somewhat uninterested in Warhammer lore until I read that and I was like, oh my god, I love this. I want to know so much more about every single area that this interacted with. I want to know more about mutants and vampires and dwarves and gnomes. And yeah, I fell in love real hard after that book.
It's a good book. I'm pretty sure that one's in Audible.
It is. When I say read, I mean I listened to it. But
I read audibly.
I read on the way to work over the course of a week. It was a good read.
Oh my gosh. So speaking of Orcs and Goblins, I actually got to the pleasure to see some of your absolutely gorgeous Orcs and Goblins army yesterday.
You're too
beautiful.
Kind.
No, they were beautiful, man, for sure. So have they always been in the army, like your army of choice? Have you collected different armies in the past? Are you currently collecting and painting others?
Well, yes, and yes. they've always been my favorite. They were my first one from that box set, like Ruglands Armored Orcs. I fell in love with them. I mean, they had war machines. I think there was a specific rock lobber at the time. That had, it was a regiment of renown. So they were my first fantasy army that I was interested in. But since then, I've dipped into just about every other one. I've got a few well-painted collections. My brother painted up a Skaven army that we used to play together. And Empire was the first tournament army that I went, that I went to a big grand tournament in Baltimore with.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I did all right. I mean, it wasn't, it was a big learning experience, but Vampire counts, I've done the best with at grand tournaments. I took second one year. I think it was 2004 or 3.
Hell yeah.
Congrats. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going back a couple of years, but I don't know when the last time they've done a grand tournament is.
I feel like, I don't know if this adage holds true or not, but I think for every edition of Warhammer that you play, you add on 1.5 armies.
Yeah.
And you're allowed up to 5 when you first start.
I'm doing the math and I think you're dead on. Yeah, because I've got ogres, I've got dark elves, I've got Skaven, Orcs and Goblins, Wood Elves. I never got the high elves or the dwarves, but my new one, like you asked, is Bretonian. I've always wanted a Bretonian army, and with this new release of the old world, it was a good chance to pick up army and get started right away. And I'm having fun painting them, and I actually think they're pretty good. So they should be fun to play too.
They're sculpts from what 20 years ago, and they're still beautiful.
Yeah. You know? I had the original fifth edition box set. I think had the lizard men and the Bretonians in it.
Yeah,
and then the latest ones, they obviously the horses are a little bit newer, but they're still from sixth edition.
Right. Yeah. And that was the last updated book they got.
Yeah, last time they got novels and books. Yeah.
Right.
Till recently. Yeah.
Poor Brett. No, we have a lot of friends in the network who are very in love with Bretonia. So it's always good to hear that there are more lovers of the lady out there.
Oh, yeah. Our social group is really Bretonian heavy, actually.
Correct.
they touch a lot of the major tropes. You know, you're talking the high fantasy and Arthurian legend. I mean, who wasn't fascinated by those tales growing up?
Yeah, for real. Exactly. Again, because this is just who I am as a person, favorite Bretonian mini is the questing knight with his entire wardrobe on the back of the horse.
Yep.
Love that guy.
they put a lot of character in those questing knight models.
They really did. There's one of them just like playing a lute riding a horse, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the musician. Hey, we're talking about the Dungeons & Dragons movie. It's like the guy from the Bard.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. He's got it like upright like this. He's just
Yeah. You're soloing at that point. You know what I mean? Like that's the high peak.
And they have the unit champion. So they all have great weapons, right? Which is super cool. The unit champion's great weapon is just pointed down. He's holding it down.
Right. He's going to punch you with a cross guard.
No, you're absolutely correct. And one of the other ones, they're just the different facial structure too. One has like a cloth over like his whole forehead. One of them is just butt ugly with this huge growth on his eye. He probably just got hit by something and it's just
probably a cross guard.
Yeah. he probably lipped off to the champion. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And the other one just has this beautiful mustache that he's twirling just, and that's the character of Warhammer from back in the day that I just, what I fell in love with. Right. When I first started.
It grabs you visually. If to see a battle laid out on the table with good scenery and painted armies, it's like, it's hard not to be a little bit turned on from that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that was kind of one of my big things is going over to Dan's house as a kid growing up. Like, they had minis all over the place because their paint room was everywhere, right? Anywhere that they could sit down and paint, which I get.
Yep.
But, eventually you just walk up to, like, the giant dinosaur that has little tiny lizards on its back, and you're like, I got to know what this is, man.
Oh, right.
You know?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Stegosaurus with, like, little chameleons all over it.
Shooting a giant bow.
Right. Oh my gosh. No, it was absolutely what a time to start playing. I think it was the tail end of fifth or it was the beginning of sixth. It was such a cool time. Anyways.
Yeah, sixth and seventh were pretty good. The game was in a good space, those two editions.
I really like six a lot for sure. Again, I started with Wood Elves way back in the day, and I don't think they grew out of sixth until the end of eighth. So,
yeah, they didn't get another book till eighth.
Yeah, and it was real good.
Oh, and it was right before the end.
Uh huh. they gave us a lot, and then took it all away.
Yep.
So we actually, speaking of, we chatted a bit about how you think yesterday, you think that this is probably one of the best versions of fantasy yet.
In all the ones I've played and I've played them all up through. I think they've really been able to do a nice job toning back some of the things from eighth, but keeping, I mean, it feels a lot, I would say like sixth. It's the most like six. And I think that's a good thing, because that was I think one of the best versions, but then they fixed some of the other stuff in there to make the game. I think everything feels where it should be. Dragons feel powerful, units are still useful. I haven't played through all the scenarios yet, but I'm hoping that they lean into it a little bit to kind of like accentuate the infantryman, because there might be a little bit weaker, especially coming off of 8th edition. They feel a little weaker, but
sure.
But with the, you know, the new formations, I really like counter charge and some of these new changes. It's probably my favorite edition. It doesn't feel so much like you go, I go from the old times where, you know, if I didn't get the first turn, then I have like, you know, a significant disadvantage. I don't feel that way in this edition. There's a lot of reactive abilities that they put in there. You know, you used to always have flee from a charge. You'd have stand and shoot. Now you got counter charge with cavalry. I think that was a great addition.
Yeah, it's, and it makes so much sense too, because boar boys aren't going to stand there and just get charged by something, you know.
Oh, hey, look, boss, they're coming right for us. What do we do? Let me think about it.
They're just drooling all over themselves, right?
They're getting closer. You're aiming for a crumpet.
And then you feel your animosity roll, and that's why you got charged. Yep.
Love orcs.
Yeah, they're awesome.
The only thing I miss from animosity is throwing stuff at each other was just so flavorful.
Oh, the chart was great. Some of the new army book, the one thing I missed too is some of the flavor sections. One of my favorite orc and goblin sections was this boss was yelling at two of his underling orcs, and they're complaining. They're like, hey, what are you doing with Ragnar's boy? He goes,
yes.
Oh, we found him sleeping. Of course, we found him. He was dead, so they're eating him. Like, he was dead. Of course, he said he was just sleeping, but you know, them lot's all liars. I don't know who wrote that, but man, that is orcs.
Yeah, the boss is like, you'll save me a leg if you know what's good for you.
Yep, exactly. It was a great way to finish it.
My favorite one from Orc and Goblin book is War Boss for a Day. And Tim has heard me talk about this one 1,000 times where the goblin...
I don't get tired of it, though.
It just gets stuck in a dragon's throat and kills it.
Yep.
But he doesn't survive the celebratory beatings.
Yep. They had such great flavor.
Oh my gosh, orcs are just the best in everything. Anywhere there's an orc.
Oh yeah, they've done a great job with them.
Even Jork's pub, still good.
Yeah.
So for this edition, I've only gotten a couple games in so far. Is there anything that, like, just on your viewpoint so far and however many games you've played that you're like, I wish this would improve or this was a little bit different? Or is it still kind of, hey, I'm riding the high and having fun?
I am riding the high and having fun.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it's been great. I've got, you know, less than a dozen games in for sure. Maybe 7 or 8. But this edition so far, I've liked everything I've seen. And, you know, what I really appreciate is they came out with that FAQ this week.
Yes.
That cleaned up a lot of questions people were having. And I think for the most part, that was a lot of their answers were what I would have read it to be. Anyway, I mean, they kind of made the most sense and they were the least gamey and it seemed like it's what they intended. I mean, a lot of these issues didn't seem that cloudy to me. If you just read the rule, it seemed like it was pretty simple, but you know, it's nice to have that clarification and as quickly, you know, because it's only a couple months it's been released and
yeah,
we've gotten two FAQs. So that's nice.
What a quick turnaround for GW usually, you know, like
it's encouraging for the future of the old world as well, you know, that they've come out with that. They've updated the legacy books that they said that they weren't, you know, really going to give much attention, but they went back and they put FAQs and updates on all of those books. So, well, not all of them need changes, but you know,
right. Exactly. And you know, the legacy armies, they're good.
I've played against a couple and just the undead, but they feel just like all the other ones, you know. Yeah. I've written up lists and stuff like that. I think they did a nice job on the legacy list. I would love to play against Chaos Dwarves, though. I'm glad they put them in there and gave them an official army list, semi-official.
So I'm also glad that they're officially here, but at the same time, I remember the absolute death and destruction that they caused because they were a Forge World army and they would just murderate everything. So I'm terrified.
Well, I think one of the best things about this edition so far is that all the books came out at the same time. So they all have that same balance. Now, in the Arcane journals that have come out since then, I don't think they're on balance. It's just new cool ways to play.
And honestly, I think this is the way to go.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, just here's a fun new leader or like a new cutesy little formation that's not game breaking, but everyone gets all their rules all at the same time. There's no questioning how many books do I need to play this game, one is actually like up to date. So I want to play my Slaanesh Demon Army in Age of Sigmar, but I don't know what books I need to play my army. So, yeah, and that's bad.
You roll 2d4 and then you figure out how many books you need. I'm pretty certain.
It's a random,
right?
It's probably 3d4, really. Yeah, right. It's got to be higher.
And with Age of Sigmar, I need to also wear a string bikini. So while I'm playing.
Well, that's only if you're playing with the most recent FAQ, but yeah.
Now, Andy and I were talking yesterday. The first edition of Sigmar rules, as a Night Goblin player, if you had a black hoodie and you put your hood up and you cackled, you could reroll your ones on an attack. It was written in the rulebook.
I mean, I love that.
It was cute, but it was so stupid. Anyways, we don't have to get into Sigmar. oh, man.
And if it's an official Night Goblin hoodie, then yeah, you can reroll twos too.
Yep. Don't get me started. No. if you're playing fish people and you actually smell like a fish market, then
they sell those packets of the tuna and like Chipotle sauce or whatever right outside. It's like, listen, man, do you want to win or do you want to win?
With each book sold.
So as a completely new player to fantasy, I've played 40K. I've played a lot of skirmish games. I play a lot of MCP, a lot of Shatterpoint.
All good.
I have yet to play a game of Old World. And as far, there's a bunch of different ways to get into the game. I've bought purchased, before Dan corrects my grammar there, the Tomb Kings box, because I love undead stuff. I love vampire counts. I want it all. But because, yep, you know, on release they had the Tomb Kings, I was like, okay, this is going to be, you know, one of the seven armies I said I was going to build and play. What's kind of, you know, as someone with a kind of a pedigree here, for a brand new player, what's the way to get in? Should I be watching battle reports? Should I be just reading the rule book? Should I be trying to do teaching games? Should I be watching other people at like an LGS, like figuring out kind of the basics? Or what's the way to really dive in? Because I'll be honest, I'm super overwhelmed when I hear people talking about it and certain magic items and standard bearers and what's full formation and bannermen and kind of all that stuff. Like, what have you done teaching games before? Like, how have you seen people respond the most positive?
Well, there's a couple different approaches, but I used to be an outrider for GW. So I would go around to conventions and game stores and actually put on instructional games too for a short time. Now you're going even further. But the best way I think to learn is if you have an experienced player that can teach you the ropes. And then you start out with just fighting. Like somebody else is doing it now where it's just like they called it Core Hammer. And I like that. It's like you just start with some core units, and there's not a lot of like crazy core units. A lot of the special rules aren't going to be in there, but you can get the basics down, the movement, the shooting, how the phases work. And the best way to learn is definitely to have an experienced player. If you don't have that, I was reading the book and I'm like, there's so much in that book and the rules are kind of like all over the place. It's one of the more organized rule books that they had for Warhammer, but that's not a real high standard. I mean, there was a time when they didn't even have an index in the books. So
yeah,
they had a glossary, but they didn't have an index. Anyway, I digress.
You can tab the hell out of a book without an index.
Yes. Yeah, you do. But the best one is somebody that knows. But even less our veteran players like myself, it's like I'm mixing up editions. So sometimes I'll remember a rule or I'll read into a rule and it's like completely different. And I like the changes that they have done, but some of them I've missed just because I just assumed how it would be. But, you know, a new player, wow, there's a lot in there to remember. You're going to forget stuff, you know. Oh, what's a skirmish formation and who blocks line of sight? Yeah, there's a lot of like those little nuanced things that us ultra nerds argue about. But yeah.
And we need FAQs to tell us how to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, oh, see, I told you that's what it meant.
And that's kind of the thing, too, is because there's been so many additions and people always started, you know, in sixth or seventh, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever. Like, the additional information of previous editions doesn't apply to this particular one. But nope. That's kind of the standard conversation, right? Is like, well, in this edition, it worked this way. It's like, okay, but though, right. Yeah. How does it pertain to this?
Yeah. You forgot that it didn't work particularly well back then either. So it works this way now and it's much better. Yeah. The best way to get into it though is to start out with some small games, you know, shrink the game, you know, don't add magic right away. Don't add extra stuff. Just play with your units. Don't even add command groups for a while, you know, because everything like a challenge will slow you down into combat. But you know, you just you push your guys around, get used to the maneuvers, the different formations, and you know, and then slowly add more and more into it till you, you know, till you got it. Once you got the movement down, then you can kind of add new blocks, that kind of thing.
That makes a ton of sense, just using some core units without a whole bunch of the magic items and rules and stuff so you can get used to the flow of combat, how to move things, and kind of turn order. I don't know why I hadn't thought of that, but it's really obvious, right?
Like, honestly.
And just add on from there. And granted, I'm a player that's like, I'm super interested and attracted to like, oh, well, I want magic, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. So like, I want to bite off more than I can probably chew at the start, but yeah, I think boiling it back down and doing core units is probably like 1,000% the way to go.
Oh, it just, and again, if you're using a smaller list, but don't get into the list thing, just take like a one shooting unit, maybe two infantry units and a cavalry unit. And maybe if you have them, I know dwarves don't have them. Make it fun a little bit. Yeah. Rub that salt.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, you don't add a lot at first. Then once you're comfortable with each section of the rules, you just add a little more and sprinkle it in. Like some of the, I think the rule book used to be, and I think it still is, I don't know that I noticed it specifically, but it had like the basic rules and then it had advanced rules that you'd add in later. Usually incorporated things like terrain and stuff like that. When you're first playing, if you mess up a rule, that's another thing. Don't worry too much about it. You know, don't make your first play experience a hardcore tournament. You know, I think that might end up being a negative experience, and you know, you'll learn a lot of rules wrong that way,
and you'll make a lot of enemies.
Yeah. Yep.
But so, I just had an interesting, as you're talking about this, Andy, interesting idea that the battalions that they're coming out with is actually probably one of the best ways to learn how to play the game.
Exactly. I mean, I think card games do this. Don't they have like booster pack tournaments where, you know, you just play with like the set of cards that you get in a pack?
Yeah, drafts.
Yeah. And these
army. Do that with Warhammer? You buy a box, you paint them up, and you pass the box to the next person. They take a unit out of it.
And take one down, pass it around.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to double it and give it to the next guy, actually.
Pay it forward.
Honestly, this, and that's a very common thing in MCP is what, the 3-box challenge?
Yeah.
Right? So essentially, what is it, Tim? You take a core set and then three into extra.
You have 3 expansion boxes and you make a roster out of that.
And an affiliation box counts as 2?
Yes.
Yep. Right? So this is essentially like you take the battalion boxes for Old World and there's either like half of that is your army or, you know, that could be your brand new army as a new player. And that's how you work. So this doesn't work exactly with your Tomb King box that you bought because it has characters and a whole bunch of extra stuff in it. But if you take out the dragon and probably the chariots, like that's a battalion box. And you as Tomb Kings need a caster just because you need to not crumble.
Yeah.
But
crumbling's bad. I've heard
crumbling can be real bad. but it's like the Orcs and Goblins battalion box is just a ton of Orc boys, a couple units of Goblins, and 2 chariots.
Yeah, which is it's a great start, too. So those are the units you're going to want to get good at using anyway.
Right.
I think, you know, if you want to be good on a tabletop, you got to be able to use all of your units effectively. So,
yes.
As things get more complicated, they're more fun, though. Like the wizards are fun. So once you get to them and add them in the game, I think they're fun to explore and figure out how best to use them.
Yeah, you're not going to start out with the blue control deck. You're going to start out with, you know, the green worm deck. The 7/7s that are just absolutely murdering everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But, like, the Dwarf Battalion that they just came out with is a couple units of Dwarf Warriors, a couple units of Dwarf Shooters, and 2 Gyrocopters.
Oh, wow.
That's a great list, you know?
Is that kind of the premise of a battalion box, is to be able to, like, well, here's a bunch of your core stuff that you're going to need. You buy this, and then you buy what you want kind of around that to fill in and add some flair?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, they've done a pretty good job with these new ones, too. It seems like they've balanced them pretty well. There's not a lot in there that you're not going to want.
Right, exactly. Like, when are you never going to need more orc boys, right?
Right, right. Like,
boar chariots are the best.
Yeah. Or if you're Khemri, you know, more skeletons. Yeah, you're going to want them, even if you're just going to put them on a base.
Oh, twist my arm, you know? Oh, no, I have 2 bone dragons? Oh. And I think it also comes with a hero on foot, too. It does, yeah, for the Khemri one.
It was a great army box. I think gave you almost a 1,500 point list, didn't it?
Yeah. I just blew Tim's mind. He's like, wait, I get a caster on foot too?
No, I knew that because there was like a whole discussion of like, okay, well, because I didn't know, right? There's the Grand Army, there's the Lord guys, and a third one. And I was like, I don't know which one I should be trying to build towards, because I could put a dude on the Bone Dragon, or I could put a dude on a horse, or, you know, just, you know, on his feet, I guess. But yeah, there was a bunch of options in there.
His little shambly feats.
That would be tough for a new player. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting perspective because I've been playing for so long, but breaking in is like, how do you even assemble your squads? You know, what do you put in there? Do I put bows on these guys on horses, or do I give them a spear? You know, you don't even know what's good yet.
Correct. Well, and even just assembling in general, like I was firing off sprues like into my face constantly. I had no idea what leverage I was applying that created that type of force. But listen, yeah, I got attacked early while assembling some of these models.
It was hilarious.
Well, I'm hoping most of the new players have a friend that got them into the game, because that's the guy that's going to kind of point you in, hopefully point you in the right direction, not just like, you know, set you up for, oh, crushing you later.
Well, it's probably a little both. it was Taylor and Tan. Yeah, Taylor, Daler and Tan. That's what I meant.
Yeah, Tim and I actually, we had a good, I think with Tim's partner, Lindsay, we had a good 45-minute conversation on the phone of like, nope, you only need one command group per unit. You can't have more than one, like just on how to actually assemble a unit. Because I, like, when he called me, I was like, oh yeah, he has 0 experience. Like, it's just something that is completely out of my mind because I've been doing this for 20 years, right?
Right. Build an army list. Or sometimes they come over from 40K. So, that, you know, there's not big changes there. You got the idea. How do you put an army together? What, you know, upgrades. How do you buy an upgrade? I mean, because when it's in, there's 6 points for a shield. Is that like I spend 6 points and like the whole army has, you know, the whole unit has shields? Yeah. When you're first doing it, it's a little bit confusing.
Well, and thankfully I did have that 40K background, at least for a little while. I played a bunch of 8th. So like, it was like, okay, yeah, I know if I want this guy to have a better gun or a better spear or whatever, I'm paying for it for each individual model. But it was the full command that really threw me. I was like, okay, so if I have full command, I have a musician, a champion, and a war and a standard bearer. I have no idea what any of those three things mean. Right? Do I need them all? Do skeletons like to boogie down? But like, probably.
Well, you know, for a tip though, if I can give you a tip for, and this is my perspective, I would never buy a musician for an undead army.
Okay.
They do very little for the points. I mean, you can just save points on the musicians. Because, one, you can't march anyway, so the +1 to enemy sighted rule is no good. You know? And if you lose combat by 1, that's no big deal. You lose 1 guy. It's not like you have any chance of just blowing your die roll and running away. So a lot of the advantage that a musician gives to an army, and remember, it only counts if you tie, and then you lose, then the whoever didn't have 1 loses by 1. Well, okay, that's not that big deal for you, you know?
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah, so maybe skeletons want to boogie down, but they don't need to.
Well, the 6 points you pay for the musician is 1 extra guy. So if it would make a difference in any of the combats, it's not going to make a difference. I mean, you got the first one already prepaid. So, you know, you're going to just skeleton that way. Anyway,
fair enough. And
pro tip.
Musicians still, do they still give the +1 to rally as well, which skeletons don't care about, I realize.
Yeah, undead isn't going to worry about any of that.
Right, because you never run away. So
all their advantages are for morale test kind of stuff.
and doesn't make any difference for you.
So as a Tyranid player, I feel like with Undead, I'm in a pretty good spot where I can just kind of ignore a bunch of things other people have to deal with.
Uh-huh.
It'll make learning the game easier. Don't ever.
Nice. All right. I chose well.
Yeah, it's psychology though is a tricky part of the game though, you know. Yeah. And that's where they made some of the biggest changes from previous editions, I think.
Fear actually matters now, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. But not too much where it's like, oh boy, you know, all the fear causing armies are going to dominate the meta. You know, it's not a worry. They've done a pretty good job making it feel good. Like it actually has an effect, but it's not overpowered. Nothing seems overpowered. I mean, I don't think dragons do, but that, you know, that'd be the only thing people are arguing about. But they should feel powerful. I mean, it's a dragon.
It's a dragon.
Yeah. And not every army can get them.
A sun dragon is 300 points. Like, yeah. It should be really good.
Hey, I remember.
That's 400 skeletons, right? For 300 points.
I remember an edition when you could take units of dragons, up to 6 dragons in a single unit.
Ugh. Ugh. That must have been awesome.
For the person playing it.
That was before Hero Hammer. That was...
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
so I also Tim, always Hero Hammer. No.
Cheaty pointers.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. We actually just finished a couple of episodes on High Elves because Dan plays High Elves. So
I played him.
Yes, you did. That's right. Yeah, we talked about your game. And he was like, yeah, dragons are real good.
Yeah, they are very good. They do work.
I have yet to face one, thankfully. I faced some dragon princes and I killed... He had a unit of 5 and I shot at them with regular guns and 3 of them died. And he's like, this is ridiculous.
Well, like, dwarves have the tools to deal with it. But, you know, once it gets there, you know, he's going to be.
Oh, it hurts.
Yeah, they do work. But dwarves are going to be more resilient. You got shield wall. You got a whole bunch of ways to not run away. So,
yeah,
and then,
for sure.
Then the dragon's stuck, which is not good for them.
Right, because I got slayers coming in. I don't care about your toughness 6.
he's going to want to be in combat because he doesn't want you shooting at him.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, he can't just, like, hang back.
He's as you know, Andy, I don't take shooting anyway, so.
Yeah, well, that bold choice.
It's a bold choice, that's for
bold
sure.
Bold choice.
I don't know how it's going to pay out.
Wow, milk on a hot day.
Yeah, that's fair.
To cycle back to Orcs and Goblins, though, Andy, is there a particular unit in this particular edition that really stands out as your favorite, either mechanically or like lore-wise, that you're just like, yeah, that's my guy. I really like this dude.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked. There's one unit that I've been waiting for it to be good. Now, I like, you know, who doesn't like Night Goblins with the Fanatics or Black Orcs are awesome, you know, a big boss on a wyvern, the chariots, they got great chariots. Wolf boys are cool. I've been waiting ever since I played for Orc Boar Boys to be good. And they are really good in this edition. I am really enjoying them.
That makes me really happy.
they are my, I don't know if it's my favorite unit, but I've always wanted them to be good. And this edition, in the old world, they're good.
What is it about this edition that really turned them up?
Well, they hit that sweet spot on the points value. One of the problems with them compared to other heavy cavalry before was their armor save was always lackluster. Now, their toughness kind of made up for that in previous editions, but they never did enough work to justify the points compared to the other stuff in the Orc and Goblin list. This time, I think they did a nice job with the internal balance where Boar Boys, you know, it's tough. If you can spend 200 points on a unit of Boar Boys or Orcs or Night Goblins with all their toys, it's like they're all going to do different things, but they're all going to feel like you spent your points well. And they gave them Furious Charge, which I think really ups their damage output. And the other thing is their Choppa's rule applies to their Cavalry Spear or their Hand Weapon if you don't give them Cavalry Spears. But, you know... And counter charge really ups all cavalry, but particularly for Boar Boys who then want that charge for all the cool orky rules to start kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put a boss in that unit and boy, you're really having some fun.
Plus just saying Orc Boar Boys or Orc Boar Boy Biggins.
Yeah. Orc Boar Boy Biggins.
It's just so much fun.
That, I guess, is the only rule I'm not crazy about in this new book is Biggins feel a little underwhelming. They used to be better. They used to have a plus one weapon skill and strength.
Yeah.
Now they just get, what, AP and...
It is still plus one strength.
Only in combat, though. Only in melee.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, for strength tests, for magic and all these other things, they don't come in a lot, but they do make a difference. Now, they don't have that plus one attribute.
And so, Tim, choppas is essentially any weapon that an orc picks up is a choppa.
Love it. All right. Yep.
Big.
I'm an orc player now, by the way.
I'll teach all about them.
This is the best teacher in the house. Yeah,
so. Actually, speaking of, if someone is looking to get into orcs or playing against orcs for the first time or orcs and goblins, what are some of the things that they should be looking out for? Like, what are some of those signature units where they need to know those kind of rules and those basics to either playing against or with?
Well, I'll go down through the top. Let's start with the war machines are pretty similar to everybody else's war machines. So their stone throwers are all the same. So not big differences. They have the same thing. They're infantry based. Their psychology isn't really great and their leadership's not top of the line elite. But some of the signature units you're going to be looking to fight, black orcs are pretty good. You know, they're very tough. They're very strong and they come with full plate armor in the old world edition. And
I've lost so many Skavens in Blood Bowl to Black Orcs. They just, I'm like, I know I'm going to lose. I'm 3 to 5 of my characters are going to be outright killed in this game.
Good armor and good toughness. It's like the Dwarven motto, but Black Orcs do it well too. They're on a bigger base, but they're pretty good. And they can have a whole bunch of different weapons in the same unit. Like some of the guys could have great weapons, some of the guys have additional hand weapons, some guys can just have a sword and a shield. So they're one to watch out for, but they're just tough. They're going to be hard to break. The regular boy is pretty good. He's tough, but he's not particularly skilled. Not a big deal. Night goblins, though, that's the ones you got to watch out for, because they're full of all, like most goblins, right? They're full of all their little tricks. That's why they're the most fun to play. So any goblin unit, like a Skaven and goblins, I think maybe goblins are just shaved Skaven with no tails. You know, could just be
like a little shaved the tail on accident.
Yeah, like a shaved, like a little hamster Skaven. But
well, they were holding a razor to shave, but it turned into a choppa all of a sudden. So now they don't have tails.
And they're hyperallergenic. So, you know, no hair. So, but the night goblins have all the tricks. They'll have like things like nets or the fanatics and fanatics in this particular edition, that's going to be a puzzle. All the players are going to have to try to figure out, especially your competitive players, because you're going to see Night Goblin armies. And the fanatics are one of those things that's really tricky to use or tricky to play around. You know,
What do they do? Well, like, what is a fanatic?
All right, a fanatic is a goblin that is all juiced up on mushroom wine or some concoction that is a Night Goblin shaman threw together. It feeds them to him, and they go all crazy and they spin this giant ball and chain around, right? And they come whipping out of the unit when they're all frothing at the mouth. And when the enemy gets close, their mates go and take him and throw him out in front of him. And he just starts whirling around and he moves randomly. And if he hits you, you take a bunch of really strong hits that like punch through armor. It used to be knights hate them.
Yeah.
Armored cavalry. They don't like to see fanatics, but you know, you can take up to 3 in a Night Goblin unit, and the turn you put them out, you put them out 3 inches, and you can put them out in your turn or your opponent's start of the turn at the very beginning of the turn. So contrary to previous editions where you could bait them out, you can't do that now. Like they don't have to put them out if they don't want to. And I can march my goblins up to get like, you know, within 5 inches of you, put them out 3 inches and then push them through you next round. So you can't really avoid them by staying away from them. They're hard to play around. I haven't really figured it out myself, but they're fun. And half the time they do as much damage to the goblins, but they're cheap.
Well, they can do damage to your own stuff as well. They're just swinging a chain and they don't care where it ends up.
Well, they get dizzy. You know, they're already drunk. You spin in circles a bunch of times. That's a recipe for disaster.
Or fun. It's fun of the two.
So the army is fun. It has a lot of those things. The other thing to watch out for that's kind of unique to orcs and goblins is they've got a lot of units, especially in the Night Goblin flavor, if it's on a bouncing thing, it's probably got random movement, which means counter to most of the thing. Like I got in a great maneuvered spot, and then you got a Mangler Squig just turns to look at you, and you know he runs into you without declaring a charge, and there's nothing you could do because you didn't expect it. Now they have to wheel in this edition, but on that small base, that doesn't really take up a lot of movement, so they can, you know, pretty well, getting if you got to get all the way behind them to make it real hard for them to get to you. But yeah, they can come out of weird angles, so that's one of the things that Orcs and Goblins do well. Mostly goblins.
Well, that's pretty thematic, right? You have no idea what way they're going to come from, even if they're in front of you. Like,
right. Well, so as an Orc and Goblin player, a unit like that controls a good chunk of the battlefield. He's got a nice big control footprint, you know, and that gives you, you know, gives you room to maneuver some of your, like, you know, keep the people away from your boar boys so they can set up that nice juicy flank charge that you're really looking for.
Was there a unit in Orcs and Goblins that, like, you maybe shied away from at first, but once you kind of figured out how it worked, you're like, yo, I actually really like these a lot?
Boy, they've all worked pretty good.
I've got one.
Yeah.
Okay. Error Boys.
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent answer. Yeah.
Error Boys. So they're orcs who other orcs think are kind of weird because they shoot bows instead of hitting people in the face.
Yep. Also, it was arrow and not error.
Error.
Well, that's how they call them. Error Boys. But
so that's how they say it. Okay. All right. Same thing, I guess.
Yes. Yep.
They're so, not proper orky.
Right. But the problem with error boys in the tribe is regular orc boys go to make fun of them, but they get close enough that the error boys just start shooting at them. So, so they're like, you know what? Screw them.
Mind over matter.
Right. So orcs, not real good at ballistic skill, right? They don't shoot well.
So, especially now that they have the entire army, with a few exceptions, has impetuous. So that means that they don't always do what you want. They're going to want to get in a fight, which I think is a better reflection of orcs than the old animosity rules, but those were fun too in their time.
I think it's better flavor and also less flavor at the same time. Oh, in a weird fair way.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Cause the animosity rules very flavorful, but it made playing them competitively
very difficult.
Very, very difficult. I mean, you were really counting on luck. You couldn't win a major tournament with the Orcs and Goblins unless you just had five lucky and it doesn't work that way. If you're playing Orcs and Goblins, you got to embrace the bad luck too, because you're gonna have it.
Dice are a character, you need to work around them.
That's why if anything's good, bring two.
Take two, they're good.
Or as in the case of Orc or Night Goblin level 4 shamans, bring three.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to fight it. Andy wrote this list and I was like, how many Night Goblin level 4s can you fit? And he was like, I'll rage something up. It looks so much fun.
Now, that's one of the things, I don't know if, I haven't heard anyone discussing it yet, but looking at the way you build armies, and this might not make a lot of sense because you're just new, but some of the veteran players might hear what I'm saying. There's limitations on how many of these high-level characters you can put in a army based on the points value you're fighting. So the standard game's 2,000 points. You can take like a war boss and a level 4 shaman, or you know, one major fighty lord and then one wizard lord kind of character. Orcs have that limitation, but if you look at the book in Ravening Hordes, goblins are not limited to their lord and war boss level characters. So you can spend your whole character allotment on lord level characters if they're goblins or night goblins.
So what that means, Tim, is in a 2,000 point game, you can take 1,000 points of Night Goblin or Goblin characters.
Yo, okay.
Now, Night Goblins you have to, because, which I think is one of the cool things that they put in the book, is you have to take a hero, like a boss, war boss, shaman, or odd knob, whatever they're calling him now, for every unit of Night Goblins you want to take.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like he's the boss that brought his boys with him, you know?
I think it's such a great addition.
It really pulls in that tribal feel for Orcs and Goblins.
Plus, if you want to take a Night Goblin army, you're going to take a bunch of Night Goblin shamans, all that sort. It's so thematic.
Well, they're cheap and they die easy. They run away. They, so you want a backup. or two.
Yeah, right. Or five.
Yeah, five.
So I have a two-part question as well, because I'm assuming you've been to a whole bunch of events and conventions over the years playing any type of Warhammer or miniatures game. Do you have like a top two, either convention or event that you've been to, as well as experiences at some of those events? I'm sure you've had some wild moments or seen really cool things happen or very interesting things.
Now, I haven't been any to the Western conventions. Everything I've done has been kind of on, a couple things in like New York, Baltimore Grand Tournament, and then like Historicon in PA. So I haven't been to as many as maybe you guys have, but Historicon is great if you're into historicals or just gaming, because it's just a whole weekend of fun gaming. I went there when the Warhammer, the old world died. You know, and at the end times, I was very sad for a long time, and I didn't turn. Oh, I turned a little bit to beer, but mostly to bolt action. So my rebound girl was bolt action for a while, and I tell you, it was just coming out, and I've always been a World War II fan because I'm a 50-year-old guy, so it's kind of mandatory. I smoke meat too. You smoke meat, and you get into either ancient Rome or World War II.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
It's you heard it because it's true.
Oh, that was real good.
Yeah, so I got into World War II for a while after trying to get over the GW blues, but
and after roasting a brisket and smoking it perfectly, getting that great smoke ring.
Yeah. Sit there with my beer and my memories, writing my memoirs. Oh, Memoirs man. Of a Failed Orc Warlord.
Actually, that's
the beginning of a book, right? Yeah.
I'd read it, yeah. I'd have someone read it to me, and then I'd listen to it in the car.
Audible's a great thing.
It really is.
Books on tape.
So you've had a couple pieces in White Dwarf, right? Like you've done some really kind of considerable work for the community as a whole. I know growing up, coming to the Bearded Dragon or Gamers Bazaar, some of the other game stores that we've had here, like I often heard the adage of like, well, there's no Warhammer in our town without Andy Gould. from my understanding, you made kind of an impact on the community as a whole. Would you mind kind of sharing a little bit about that and some of the stuff that you've contributed?
Sure. I've been interested in it since the late 80s, like I said earlier, but there weren't a lot of people playing back then. I mean, thinking about putting everything on a table, and back then they played on 4x8, so it's like a huge sheet of plywood, and you made all your hills out of styrofoam, and you'd maybe cut green felt for your woods and that kind of stuff. It was like it was really early era of this, so it wasn't as popular as it is has it grown to be. But so if you wanted opponents, you had to like really stir up the community. So my brother played. We played against each other because obviously we came together growing up. But then when we moved to Odiana, we like got to the Bearded Dragon or the Gamers Bazaar, and the community really picked up. You got a couple players. You had games out in the community where people could see it and say, "Hey, what is this?" And then when they ask, you don't just blow them off, and it helped to be a little outgoing. And it's not everybody's thing, but like, if somebody says, yeah, go ahead, pick that guy up, and take a look at it. And, you build in the community really, then we got tournaments. Cause I always wanted to play, it wasn't so much about playing the competitive games. It was about playing a lot. You get three games in a weekend. That was like a great weekend of Warhammer, right?
I mean, right?
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. I mean, and it gave you a reason to paint up the new units and stuff like that. So encouraging the competitive play was more about the building the community and the excitement about playing a lot of the games and getting everybody together. And that was what I really enjoyed about going to grand tournaments back in the day, was they had there's so much creativity back in those days. I mean, you didn't have the 3D printers or any of that stuff and the sculptors and all these different things. You had to like make your own modifications on the models, and you'd do head swaps and stuff like that. And some people would like go to town on an army, and some of the creativity was mind blowing, just beautiful to see.
I gotta say, some of the display boards that we've seen at events, like especially for Warhammer, AOS, Fantasy, like they're exceptional pieces of work.
Oh yeah, like dioramas plus.
Yeah.
We've had the privilege. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just echoing what he was saying. Some of the display boards alone are impressive pieces of artwork.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes understated too, kind of what you said to cycle back to that, like. Actually playing games at your local game store gets eyes on the game. If you want to build a community, listen, I think it's great if people can play at their home and have people over or do barbecues and stuff like that. But actually like getting feet on the pavement, going to your LGS, playing a game, getting pickup games, teaching people how to play, like the visibility at your game store is really what will help build the community. Cause someone's going to see some of the stuff you have out there and they're like, yo, what is that though? That looks rad. Or you have some of those interactions where you have a fanatic that's whirlwinding into your army and the opponent's army. And you guys are both hooping and hollering about it. And it makes everyone interested. Like, I think that's a very important part of building out a game is just getting there, playing games and making sure other people are around to see it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Plus supporting your local game store is always a good idea. I mean,
1,000%.
This way you've got a nice place to play. Usually they've got tables, they've got scenery, they've got a nice parking lot for you guys to all come together, and usually nice snacks that you could buy too while you're eating.
That's right.
That's good. And not that everybody has a gaming part.
Yeah.
Always. Every gaming has to, you have to have your snacks.
Right. Exactly.
Is there D&D without pizza? I don't think so.
No.
I think by law there's not, but yeah.
It might be in the rules.
The beverage can be anything, but there has to be pizzas or Doritos.
It was like, what was it, at Adepticon last year, the Kuma's Corner came out with the Adepta Burger that was Doritos on a bacon cheeseburger with a Mountain Dew aioli.
What?
It was so if you ever bad. Wanted your mayonnaise to fizz, guess what? There was a place for it.
Fizz? I never considered fizzy mayonnaise.
I hadn't either.
That's just an awful phrase. No, sir, I don't like it. It
tickles the mind in a weird way.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, I was going to touch on Adepticon. We actually had the privilege. This is our third year that we've been able to go. And I think it's the last night they set up all of the different display boards, armies on parade and stuff. And it is just beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice to watch what other hobbyists have done and just admire some of their work. And I think it gives them satisfaction, too. But boy, I tell you, that makes a weekend, too. I mean, even if like when I was going to the Grand Tournaments, if you lose one, you still got to see some gorgeous models.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know,
it's a win-win, right?
Well, in the fellowship afterwards, so. You know what I mean? Like in the wargaming community, like everyone goes out to eat afterwards or you share a bite, share a drink, whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's a nice time.
And for most gamers aren't the most social of people. So it's just a beautiful thing when they can get out and be social and comfortable. And those, you know, it really enhances the experience.
Easily 80% better experience.
60% of the time, it's better every time.
Oh my gosh. Well, listen, Andy, this has been absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to have you more everywhere all the time. You seem like the most incredible human being and exactly who I want to play Warhammer against.
Yeah, for real.
Well, you're too kind, but I do play orc, so there's that mean side too.
Yeah, right. Listen, our goblins are going to have a goblin off. It's going to be great. Now I got to paint my 250 night goblins. Great.
Yeah. I got to
squid. Take 200. They're small.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anyways, folks, thanks for listening to this episode. This has been an absolute blast. Thank you both for being here. I just want to touch on some of our sponsors here. Frontline Gaming, frontlinegaming.org. We actually have an affiliate link down in the description. So if you want to pick up any of your terrain, your battle mats, your tickets for events, etc., you can find them all there. Events kind of like the Atlantic City Open, which we will be at. I believe that's coming up next month.
It's in June. It's Father's June. Day weekend and my birthday weekend. So
that's right.
Tune in or show up and, you know, hand me a drink. It'll be dope.
Yeah, I think the next one, yes, yep. So ACO is in June for sure. I was getting that mixed up with Ironweld, which we will also be at. So yeah, go ahead and check out that affiliate link down below. It helps us directly, which is absolutely fantastic, as well as the best paints on the planet, monumenthobbies.com, which you can use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL to get some money off of your order when you shop for the best paints ever. Andy and I were actually talking about them yesterday. They're just so creamy. They have that agitator in the bottle already. They have the cap that makes it not dry out. What's not to love?
Also, their marketing, by the way, like their videos that they put out, if you check out their socials, are always hilarious.
Mint.
Yep. Yep.
Go ahead.
Don't drink the paint water.
Don't drink the paint water. I just got a sticker for that and put it on my MCP box today, because I just got a brand new Monument Hobbies miniature that nice. Charles and I are going to be painting. Charles, friend of the network. Eline? I think
Aline,
his name is?
I think.
Aline? Yeah, it's a dope mini. So,
it very much is.
Right? So I can't wait to do that. It's going to be fun because I haven't painted resin in... I've sensed a brass scorpion 15 years ago. Anyways. And yeah, as always, professionalcasual.com for literally everything else that we do. We have blog posts that are coming out. I think Lindsay has thrown one up if she hasn't done already for some new Monument Hobbies paints.
And Dr. D.
And Dr. D. Yep. He's going over the Adepticon paint set. And we have podcasts that come out all the time. WFRP, WFRP role play, actual plays. Wow. My brain just forgot how to use words there for a second. WFRP actual plays podcasts. We do Pathfinder podcasts. We stream on Twitch all the time, twitch.tv/professionalcasual, where we either play live games or I paint minis or Tim is, playing some sort of video game.
Yeah, just being an idiot on the internet for the most part.
Yeah, how's your bladder?
Not great. Yeah, there was 127 total hydrates earlier. They wanted to make sure that, I was drinking enough water, and by gosh, they made it happen.
You look pretty liquidy right now. Let's
thanks, man. Yeah, my eyes have been floating for a hot minute.
Had to switch over to the keg.
And just, getting me one of those big water coolers that hangs down like a hamster water feeder, honestly, would probably be the way to go. But specifically for more old world stuff, a Grim Podcast, A Perilous Adventure, Settling the Southlands, and now the Doomstones is about to be coming out. It's an old second edition WFRP adventure that's a lot more dungeon delvey, kind of like an old D&D experience, but set in the old world is what we're recording right now, and it's an absolute blast.
Heck yeah. But anyways, thanks again, Andy, for being on. Thank you, Tim, as always, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2E actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can check out, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew WFRP actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd Edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.